Welcome back to another episode of the Stanford Healthcare AI podcast. And we're thrilled to be joined by Dr. Shantanu Nundy, who is a physician, technologist, worked at some of the biggest healthcare technology companies over the past decade, and is now an advisor to the FDA on AI. Welcome, Shantanu.
Thanks so much, Justin.
So many things coming out. There's never a dull moment. But one of the places to start actually was something we found fascinating, which is how people are actually using these AI tools in their daily lives. So it was amazing. Actually, OpenAI shared conversations and published on millions and millions of conversations. And on the right of this chart, you can see how people were starting to use this. So I'll call out just a couple things first. And then Matt and Shantanu, please jump in. As we're talking about healthcare, one of the things we've talked on bits and pieces about and heard, rumors about from the companies, but at 5 to 10% of ChatGPT conversations relates to health. Now they publish some of these stats. They claim practical guidance 6% here. We've heard claims similarly. Google, other companies, health-related queries are top of mind for consumers, and so you're seeing this now here in the data that they've published. Some of the other things, writing, seeking information, is something very top of mind. People are doing it all the time. And then interestingly, on the left, they also talk about in the work setting, and there's slightly different uses that people are using it at work. Lots and
Sure.
lots of writing. So the thing I joke about is expect all those personalized emails to be written by AI. That's just the expectation as we're moving forward. But anything else that stand out to you both?
For me, I'll just say like my personal journey, right? Like I sort of joke, it's like it started off as like a copy editor for me, right? Then a little bit of like a ghostwriter, and now it's like a like an analyst, you know? And I think that's kind of reflected in a lot of these things, right? I'm actually sort of like almost like building on top of these tools, as obviously the tools are getting more mature, but honestly, I think most of it's me and just getting used to figuring out how to like create more complex prompts that sort of build up to more higher order tasks. So this resonates.
From my side, again, we are terminally online. We are definitely following this, maybe more so than we should even, I would say. This is totally what I would expect to see. Especially on the writing side, to see 40%. You could almost argue that there are behaviors that are internet behaviors that are kind of starting to transfer over, I think, in a large degree, like seeking information to the model, right? But the other part that my mild critique, or it's a weird thing, but you mentioned you're kind of moving up this ladder of sophistication. I can't wait for the rest of the world to get there too, because every time I open up LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever, name it, I immediately, because what we all have worked with these models, so you can immediately spot just the complete cut and paste of an AI. And I have to say, it's starting to. I don't like it. I don't know how else to say it. I feel like it's just right now, and now I'm turning into someone who's like searching for the post that is like maybe has a spelling error or has a little bit of a, clearly not an AI written cut and paste, because
The
like,
key is the double hyphen. If you see the double hyphen, you
the
know
M
that that
dash,
was AI.
the it's not this, it's that. It's like
Yeah.
it is so bad. It almost like you lose credibility, which is an interesting phenomenon that I did not expect.
It's
I didn't
true.
even expect to be saying this, but to some extent, I'm wondering. There's two things I'm wondering as a part of that. One is, I think as people move up the sophistication ladder and the models become better, whatever that looks like, personalization, memory, that may start to change, hopefully. Maybe this is just a passing moment. But the other part is like, who are these ultimate, what is this content ultimately written to do? Because if the consumers of that content eventually will be another model that's just grabbing that and providing your answer, then do I even am I even ever looking at the source again? So those are kind of things that are bumping around in my head as I'm seeing this adoption curve and this, again,
Yeah.
this increase. I know we like to we hear a lot of AI slop. I am full up of AI slop, if I'm being honest, and I'm begging for just a little bit more, at least as a reader, more content taste on the internet.
Totally fair.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, the video content. Again, we haven't talked a lot about the video and image generation, as it's been a little less relevant on kind of the healthcare side so far. But that's just another piece. You talk about, Matt, AI slop that's happening and just how easy it is now to create a video of you with any famous person that you want doing whatever you want. We continue with, we saw OpenAI DevDay, all the Sora 2 announcements, Google's VO3. That is moving so fast, and curation of content is just going to be something. Again, we've talked about it not a ton here in the healthcare context, but it's coming. And actually, maybe the one healthcare related example just that I saw recently is actually doctors starting to get faked. Real doctors that people are starting to use now to use their image and name and likeness. So, I haven't seen that yet of you, Matt, or Shantanu, but that's how I guess you'll know you made it.
How do you know I'm not one of those right now?
Exactly.
I had a suspicion. No, I'm just kidding. But on that topic too, one of the things I noticed on the video, say maybe less on the writing side, just to kind of maybe pivot from that former point I was making on the Sora 2, for example, great, interesting, where it almost immediately you can sense someone's inherent creativity. Like some of the things that people are thinking up are pretty freaking cool, but the signal to noise is difficult, right? Like there's a ton more noise now, but the signal when it's good is like, wow, that's amazing. I don't know where that's gonna head, but I have a lot more respect for the creatives of the world who are able to take that tool and still apply their inherent genius and creativity to really conjure up something amazing. I don't happen to be one of them. I tried. My kids called it all cringe, and like I gave up, so.
Well, that democratization piece, is something that is paramount on that. And I think the other piece, and Matt, maybe you want to go through this, is just the cost changing. These models used to be so expensive to create the videos. You used to only get a couple seconds. But Matt, walk us through this.
Yeah, just 2 seconds on this, and then happy State of AI report to all of you who celebrate, because a lot of us wait around for this report. Shout out to Nathan for putting this out every year. This is massively consumed by the entire industry. If you haven't seen it before, check it out, stateof.ai. You can see the link on the bottom. And this is just such a great public service because it does encapsulate in a very difficult time what's happened for the past year. This is really just to show the point, I think, that yes, we talk about the capabilities getting better, but we don't often talk about how much the capabilities are getting cheaper and more democratized. And I don't know if either of you think about this, but as we start to kind of pivot this conversation towards the direction of healthcare, and we've talked before about the increasing capabilities, the access of this technology, I think, is unlike anything I've maybe ever seen. I'm sure I know the internet's a great analogy, but it just seems faster to me and cheaper to me than ever before.
No, I think it's paramount. I mean, I think obviously like affordability is a huge issue, right? And it equates to access, especially in this country. And so I think that part of it, you're right, is that not a part of the story we hear enough about. And it's I think it's pretty incredible. Like I was we had the OpenAI team in recently, and just sort of saying like the model that they made to be the cheaper model is now performing at the same level as like their best model, like 3 or 4 months ago, right? And so that's sort of that happening, I think, does open up a lot more possibilities. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the access point and right the cost, as these are now ubiquitous, and the State of AI report also talks about the fully open source models and that race that's happening. The world is moving fast, and while once, oh, you can't do that, costs are prohibitive. I have this conversation all the time with folks in our team or health systems. The cost will come down. That is the benefit, right, of the competition we see in the space, as people are racing, and when that happens, costs will drop. One of the other things we were starting to talk to you about, though, is access. And we talked about this some before, but then I know, Shanti, we were thinking about a number of problems here. But well, what happens when you give people unfettered access? And you see a lot of amazing use cases, but we haven't talked as much about some of the kind of areas or problems or things that are coming up. But Shanti, I know you had a couple you wanted to go in, and super curious as how you're seeing this.
Yeah, I mean, to me, what's so interesting is like the juxtaposition between like these exciting progress and then sort of some of the stories that you hear, right? So there was one just a couple days ago in the New York Times. I think the title of the article was, person came to the ER with the flu and died a few days later, right? So it's basically about a college-age kid, totally healthy, had like flu-like symptoms, went to the ER, was discharged home with the viral illness, and then a couple of days later came back and then ended up passing away, right? And there's a lot of pieces to the story, but one piece of it was that there was actually a sepsis alert that was at that hospital, and that sepsis alert activated and actually was a positive alert, but it was ignored by the provider, right? And I laugh, but like I've totally been there. Like I see patients still. I usually turn off the allergy, drug interaction stuff. So I think that just brings up like a whole host of issues, right? And I think like zooming out, I think those issues are now going to become like the gatekeepers, right? It's not going to be the accuracy as much. It's not going to be the cost as much, to Matt's point. I think it's going to be the sort of social technical side and some of the specific issues, right? Where, okay, well, they happen to have the alert set up, which is great, but we know that all alerts aren't created equal, right? And then in terms of workflow, doctors were getting tons of alerts for different reasons, so it was ignored. But now there's other interesting issues that are coming up, which is, okay, well, of all the hospitals, since it's a lawsuit, right, the key is what's the standard? What do other doctors and hospitals do in that area? Do they have an alert? And then do doctors generally follow the alert? And now there's even people asking, like, maybe I should turn off my alerts as a health system, because if we don't have the alert, right, then there's no risk of our doctors ignoring their alert and then creating this problem. And it's like, that's like the exact opposite, I think, of what this technology and those graphs are showing us we should be doing, but like we have to understand like all those different sort of components of the healthcare system if ultimately we want to solve the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle with this too. I think it's, and I sometimes when I'm explaining to folks that aren't in healthcare, like how something like this could happen. Because like on its face, this is like right. You just it seems like the how did the doctor ignore that? Alert fatigue. I think this has been talked about since I think Bob Watts wrote a wonderful book on this, and we've known about this for a long time. I try to relate this to someone who's not in healthcare. It's like if you ever go to a city. That they always honk their horn, no matter like even for the slightest infraction, they lay on their horn. You start to become like, okay, they're honking, but that's just like so it fades into the background a little bit. And then if especially then if you go to a place that doesn't do that, and then it's like a huge event that someone's honking you. It has a little bit of that vibe to me. Like when do you pay attention? And then
Or
if
maybe the simplest is the boy who cried wolf, right?
100%, this is a tale as old as time to your
It's
point.
all tales all the
Right, but to your point about but with the worry though, I share this worry is that either that becomes the background noise, even like it's happened here, or it leads to a reaction that says, no more AI, no more decision support. It's clearly, causing harm. And I don't think that's right either.
Totally.
Well, Shantanu, like you're seeing this at scale. You're interacting with scientists at the FDA reviewers every day. You're seeing so many issues for these things coming up. But like, tell us a little more. Like, what are the conversations you're hearing? What are the topics that keep coming up? Is it this? Is it others? And how are you hearing those conversations going?
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, so I think, well, first of all, let me sort of, I'll say a couple of like preamble things. I think one is, it's been really incredible to get to meet a lot of the scientists and reviewers that work at FDA and made their careers there. I mean, a lot of them came straight from their PhDs or MDs into the FDA and have been there for 10 or 20 years. And so there are really incredible people thinking about this problem already. and it's really inspiring to have a chance to work with them. The other thing is like, when I was coming in as an advisor, I thought a lot about, I do feel this urgency, right? I think like stories like that example in Columbia, which was the hospital involved, like creates this urgency. And I thought a lot about like, what do I want to say to have everyone share that urgency? Because at the FDA, like the mission's really to promote and protect, right? But I think sometimes like there's a focus on the protect side and not as much on the promote side. And so like when I came in, I thought a lot about like, okay, like maybe I could use, science and numbers. And I sort of came up with five numbers that I talk about in like every meeting that's become a running joke now at FDA, which is that, there's 100 million people in our country with no regular medical care. There's 75 million that live in a, desert. Medical error is the third leading cause of death. 95% of rare diseases have no FDA-approved treatment, and life expectancy is largely flat and 4 years behind other OECD countries, right? We all have our favorite statistics, but I start with that every single time because I think what sometimes gets lost is like, what's the counterfactual, right? So you like this example we just talked about of, okay, well, there was an alert, and maybe the alert was wrong or right, or it was annoying and it was ignored. But like the counterfactual is like we've known for decades, right, since the Harvard Medical Practice Study in the 1970s, I think, or 80s, that, there's a jumbo jet every day that's crashing due to medical errors, right? And so, but it's hard because I think the way that a lot of the folks, sort of look at it is, okay, well, is this device causing harm? As opposed to saying, what's the harm that's already existing because people can't get access or that access isn't as high quality as we want.
Yeah, and I think this is the fascinating example we're starting to see in so many fields is, we've talked a lot about benchmarks on tests and exams. And while it's exciting, we know none of those are the kind of real comparator as we're talking about. What is that? What is the ChatGPT? Is the answer right? Is it wrong? It's pretty good.
Yes.
Oh, it made a mistake and that's going to lead to harm, and it will. How does that compare to the Google search compared to nothing? And these are just kind of the fundamental questions we have to wrestle with. And I
Yes.
think that the interesting field, you all probably annoyed with me for how much I point back to it, but it's fascinating starting to see the data come out in the autonomous vehicle world. Waymo's released a lot of data now on kind of their crash events and events. And actually, I've seen a lot of now doctors starting to comment on, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like if you extrapolated these numbers, this would be saving, thousands and thousands of lives. And it's not just the accident rates, the fatalities is, you can react in different ways. And there's not a right answer to be super clear, right? There's this fundamental fear, which I think is real in myself and I think the country that you start to see on an AI related error that causes harm, we're going to count as more than the physician we know harming someone, or than the car crash that was caused by, a drunk driver, because we're almost numb to it,
Yeah, it's
right?
a
And so
great. I
this
think
new
everyone's
thing
seen
is
that
worse.
video of that car, right? It's like it sticks, it stays on you, which is interesting, right? I think the other thing you brought up, which is like I think you're right. A lot of the testing right now, this is something that we're thinking a lot about right now, or the scientists at FDA are thinking about, is like a lot of the testing is in these very simulated hypothetical environments, right? And so we think, okay, that's happening, that's great. Now we need to figure out like how to do that when it comes to like, real world prompts and real world scenarios. Because the other thing I think people think a lot about is their sort of performance, which is sort of like the median or like the mean versus like the long tail. Like it's like part of the FDA's job is to think about the long tail, right? And so when you simulate and people are like, oh yeah, we tested 100 cases, we tested 1,000 cases, you're like, these things are being used by, hundreds of millions of people. So that tail gets extremely long. Somebody from the Google team, unrelated to LLM, sort of shared with me that even today, and I'm going to get this wrong a little bit, but even today, every day of all the Google searches, something like, and again, I'm going to get the number a little bit wrong, but like 10 to 15% is a search that Google's never seen before. Even today, right? And I'm not talking about like their LLM feed, I'm just talking about their normal search, right? And so that long tail, so anyway, so that's the second part. And then the third part is, now, how do we actually begin to understand the outcomes piece? And I think the other thing that relates to your point about the self-driving cars is unless we let these things drive, how can we iterate fast enough, right? So if we force everyone to stay here and then we kind of control here and we really tightly control what can be implemented with patients, the cycle times to get that learning, right? And this is where I think healthcare has historically really, really fallen down. Right, and not been able to improve quality and things, right? I think that's sort of something that I'm thinking a lot about, at least. Right.
Yeah, I mean, and then like so, and for every one of these, to your point, they stick in your head. There does seem to be a different standard. I don't know if my gut says that I don't know if I disagree with that different standard. It's for some reason. I don't know whether it's because I know it can scale, whether I know that it's probably just a blip that is maybe representative of something that we're not seeing. Like, I don't know. It doesn't. So that's I struggle with it too. But I also feel like there's the other stories that are like, hey, I went to the health system. They told me XYZ. I put it in GPT and they told me something different. And then later it confirmed what GPT said and not my, like, and I feel like we have these competing narratives. I don't know what's going to win out, but at some level, again, reflecting back on the beginning of this conversation around consumer behavior, some level, and the stats, by the way, that you pointed out about the desert and the lack of access, these things are kind of two speeding trains heading at each other to me. And I
Absolutely.
don't know how it's
Absolutely.
going to turn out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Super well said.
You mentioned, Shantanu, this idea of like, how do we get started and learn and iterate? And actually just, I think it was last week, the FDA just put something out about, real world monitoring. And so tell us a little bit more about that. It sounds similar to the concepts, but what can you say at this point?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, I think, look, I think in general, right? Even if you zoom out of software for a second and you think about, like the canonical sort of, drug pipeline, right? So you have phase one, two, three, and then phase four is post-market, right? I mean, I think that in today's environment where we have so much data, right? Like when I look at a patient in front of me, they look a lot different than the patients that were eligible and not eligible in a clinical trial, right? And that's why, people say, oh, half of healthcare is not evidence-based and half of evidence-based medicine isn't done. On some level, that's fair. On some level, it's like, well, the evidence base has limitations, right? It doesn't apply to most of the patients sitting in front of me. So those challenges were already there. But now you add to the fact that, unlike, a pill that doesn't really change once it's in the market, right? Like, we know that this stuff is changing really rapidly, let alone the fact that the underlying technology itself is advancing rapidly. So I think there's sort of this new idea that's maybe not super new, but it became maybe becoming more common to say, how do we, focus more of our attention on how these things are performing in the real world, right? For all those reasons, right? Like, we may not have the best test to know if it's valid or not. We know these things are going to change. We know the underlying technology is going to change. We know how it's deployed matters so much. And so why not, focus our attention there? And we realize, like, that's a science too that's evolving. So the whole idea behind, what the FDA put out last week, which is really exciting, is like, hey, we want to learn in that area. Right. And we recognize that evolving sort of, let's call it like the regulatory science or like the science of how do you evaluate and monitor these things. No one's quite cracked the nut on that. And that work is really distributed across academia, industry, regulatory bodies. And so it's a chance for us to really be able to understand what's working and what's not when it comes to that.
I think this is really important because, well, first of all, I just want to make a meta comment that the level of discourse, and this is again back to the credit of those that are serving in these roles, the level of discourse has, I would say, elevated beyond, I think, anyone's wildest expectations. I mean, the fact that we're thinking about these things, and the other topic I wanted to bring up in addition to this is we are, at least I'm hearing, maybe you can confirm some of these conversations, that we could get to a place where some of the trials can be performed digitally. We've seen some recent work that's kind of continuing to show us that we're getting to a level of scale and sophistication. And this is somewhat orthogonal to just the ChatGPTs of the world, but we can start to think about data and then projecting out with a great degree of confidence, matching trials that we have already, plenty of data on to show that had we done this digitally, the same outcome would have been reached. So therefore, can we accelerate the market sort of bottleneck that we have in our traditional structures without sacrificing safety? This is science fiction stuff, at least, as someone who's been around long enough to know that these ideas have been floated for a long time. It feels tantalizingly close. And again, that goes back to the level of sophistication, the level of discourse that I think the community is having with the regulators, in a way that I personally haven't observed before.
Yeah, no, and that's honestly why I wanted to be on with you guys is I think like what's been incredible just generally about this community, not just the amazing folks at the FDA, but is that like everyone I talk to is like, how can we help? Right? I think, and again, I haven't been at FDA very long and I haven't worked in other spaces within FDA, but I think, usually there's like oh, the FDA is gonna regulate us and like, I don't know what they want. But I feel like in this space, I think folks that are really at the frontier, to use an overloaded term, on the frontier, like I think have a lot of humility around like, how can we do this together? like we're trying to answer honestly like the most important health policy question of the century, which is like how do we assure access to safe and effective AI? And that's been really, incredible to see. And like part of what I'm shining a light on is like, okay, yeah, there's that whole post-market space. That's where we need help. We need like really pragmatic ways across a very wide range of technologies, whether it's an imaging-based AI, whether it's a pathology-based, whether it's, purely, conversational sort of primary care or specialty-based. Like we need ways of benchmarking and monitoring those tools. And then underneath that, there's a whole scaffolding. So I'll pick up an example of something that most people aren't aware of is, so let's say hypothetically we had like all EHR data in the country flowing through a place like the FDA. Amazing. Well, guess what? We still wouldn't be able to evaluate and monitor any AI. And why is that? Because all of us are docs. We operate. We work in the EHRs. That data is not even in there. Right, so when you prescribe a pill, right, you have the pill, you have the NDC, right, you have its e-prescribe, it's in the claim file, it's in the EHR file. Where is the fact that I used open evidence last Friday? Where is that in the EHR? And so it's like you can have all the data in the world, all the EHR data, but if it's literally not there, and if it is there, do we have a unique identifier? Right, so every pill of every formulation and every generic and every type has a different code. Do we have a code that says that this was, I'm not going to keep picking on open evidence, but this was this algorithm versioned on this day and this thing. And without that, how can we use real world evidence to be able to do this? So there's like the methodological sort of sexier stuff. And then there's like the plumbing part of this, which again, I believe that if you put that in front of the innovation community, we can solve it, but we're not really talking about those things. And instead, like we're really focused on sort of those like hypothetical testing environments, as opposed to saying, guys, what is it going to take to support an entire ecosystem to do this?
Yeah, and just it's just related to one of the multiple conversations I had, and I won't name names, but just talking with health systems of we don't even know what AI tools we're using, let alone the who's using it, where, and how. And there's been a couple instances where even a CISO's been let go because they were asked this question. This question was presented, and it's like, how can we not even have that answer? I bring it up because I actually would most and it's not even a fault on trying to. Most hospitals are trying to or are starting to put together lists of where their AI is getting used or starting to put together governance communities. But software is moving so fast. This old tool you bought and provisioned, right? A health system might have 2 to 20,000 software systems that they work with as these things are put together. And rightly so, many CIOs want to reduce that list, but every one of those software companies, if they're not sleeping, should be implementing AI. But we're still grasping as healthcare, how do we track this? How do we understand this? How do we move through this? And to your point, I think this is, again, part of the reason we started talking about this is how we can kind of bring people together to try to solve these problems. And I
And like
think
you
that's
said,
the
and it's got
exciting
to
part.
be, you have to know it at the system level, but it has to be time stamped. I'm going to use an old school term, time stamped in the individual patient encounter. Because if you want, like, let's say you're looking at a clinical decision support tool, right? And you're trying to understand in a post-market, real-world way how it's working. Well, you have to know that it was used on Mary Smith. These are the inputs into the model. These are what the outputs to the model is. And this is the version of the model, just like very simply, so that you can roll the tape and say, okay, did Mary Smith actually have that diagnosis? Did Mary Smith actually benefit from that treatment? But if we don't have that, even if we timestamp that it was used and we don't know the inputs and outputs, how can we know if it was right or wrong, right? I mean, so it's really, there's a lot of foundational stuff that has to happen in addition to, again, like what are the benchmarks? What's the tooling, right? What's the framework? And then like, how do we get access to the data? So there's a lot, of pieces there, which I think is all solvable, but, we have to be paying attention.
I mean, with such a broad landscape, I mean, again, this again goes back to the prior comment I made, which is just that this is the kind of conversation that bringing this stuff to light, even hearing from you now, like I actually hadn't considered some of this and the stat about the CIO, like, right. Imagine like the old model, which is still an operation of running a tech shop in a health system is, how are my data centers doing? How is my software all patched and up to date? And, what am I licensing? But to Justin's point, like each of those solution providers, their new version could have 9 or 10 or dozens and dozens of AI-based capabilities. That's one side. And then there's this, again, this consumer part that I keep bringing up. That's not just the patient as the consumer, but it's also the healthcare workforce that is maybe at using their phone or whatever the solution of the day is. So this is a really hairy problem. I guess one of the things I was going to ask, if at some level, do you have to just prioritize? Because it seems like there's a lot here, a lot of big rocks. And is that part of that prioritization? Obviously, you're hearing from the community. Is there also just some sort of registry or some way that we collectively are reporting signal back to you in some way, as opposed to waiting or having to have the outreach be extraordinarily proactive? I don't know if, and maybe you're going to tell me this is already a thing, but I would love to be able to say, hey, you know what? Like feedback, this was a dangerous output, or a flagging. This alert is insufficient for the gravity of what the alert is for, or some. I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's an answer here because there's so many players involved, but it almost feels like a way to prioritize all the different things we have to tackle.
Absolutely. So let me like I think it is a huge challenge. I don't want to minimize that, but I also like maybe I'll like we could like talk about some like there's a lot that we can build on, right? So the FDA's always had a risk-based framework, right? And so I think like a big part of this is really being very clear that like, hey, these are the things that are not regulated, and these are the things that are. And then of the things that are regulated, these are the things that we think it really matters to do this post-market stuff. And this is the stuff that we don't, right? And I think like, because I think, A, that this takes from 1,000 things to maybe like, you know, a couple dozen things, right? So like, for example, ambient, you know, scribes, right? I like wellness tools, right? There's places where I think we've already said these things are not regulated, or these are places where we don't need that level of oversight. So that kind of helps cut it down. The other piece is that there are scaffolding to build on. So like in the implant world, right? So FDA regulates like 20% of the economy. Part of that includes, right, like, you know, knee implants and things like that. There's a system called unique device identifiers. And there's a whole system. If you're a surgeon and you put in a device and you find that it's faulty, like you can put up the flag that says, hey, I just put something in that I think really harmed a patient. And there's a whole process for when that recall happens. Like just like, you know, car recalls, there are device recalls. And even though they don't change as frequently as software, they actually change more frequently than you think. And the oversight for the changes is not as much as you think. The canonical example is sort of screws, like ortho screws. There's a ton of companies that make them. Some of them are kind of small. They iterate on those screws. And so we really, I'm not going to say it, but a big part of the signal comes from individual surgeons saying, hey, I used this screw and it didn't seem to work the way it intended to. And so part of it is just extending some of those frameworks. Obviously, there's some unique challenges, but it's really building on some of those pieces.
Well, on that optimistic note, and again, thank you so much for joining us on the conversation again, which was the reason kind of we started this, which is how do we bring people together at, you know, what I think we all believe is kind of the most transformative time for healthcare, period. And how do we set this up right?
Totally.
Jonathan,
Totally.
thank you so much
Yeah. And for
for
anyone out
joining
there
us here.
listening that has made some progress on any of these fronts, like, you know, go take a look at the request for information that's out there and like definitely patch in. We're looking to collaborate and learn from the best. And